This episode is sponsored by the On With Origins podcast. Learn how credit union experts conquer today's toughest challenges while driving measurable results. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern, podcast, Despite Impossible. Now on to the show. On the show today, we have Ascent Platform's very own Glenn Fasella. He's here talking about financial portability and what it means for credit unions and their members. Really good stuff here from Glenn, so check it out. Hey everybody, Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we have Ascent Platform's very own Glenn Fasella with us. Glenn, how are you, sir? Good to see you.
Doing great, Mike. Great to see you as well.
Good, good. Well, I'm glad you're here because today we're talking about financial portability, what that means, and then what it means for credit unions and their members as well, because this is kind of the era that we're in right now. And I think we're just kind of getting started into it, and it's going to become the norm, I think. So, but just to kind of lay the foundation here, Glenn, what is financial portability for those folks who this might be a new term? And then, yeah, and what, and then we'll go into what the CFPB, their role in it as well.
Sure. You know, obviously, people have heard the expression open banking. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the CFPB and Rule 1033, it's often referred to as the open banking rule. But if you read the proposed rule in the Federal Register, which being a banking geek, I've done, the CFPB really calls out the need for portability. They talk about decentralization and consumer finance, seamless consumer switching, greater competitive intensity, those types of things. They reference papers on the subject. And also in Director Chopra's Money 2020 speech in 2022, he also talks about portability and talks about mobile phone number switching as a noteworthy example of how he wants to see Rule 1033 play out.
Oh, interesting.
So when I hear open banking, I what I think is financial portability, the flexibility for consumers to be able to move their accounts, their products, yep, not just their information, from one financial institution to another.
So what does this mean for a credit union out there and their members? Are there pros and obviously there's pros and cons to this, but what, I mean, from your perspective, because obviously it sounds like you've done a lot of research on this. So what are you seeing out there as far as pros and cons with this rule?
Well, it's certainly going to increase competitive pressures.
Oh yeah.
The ability for people to switch. I think that's pretty straightforward. And I think it raises new challenges around the technology as well. As open banking rolls out, and it's a lengthy rollout process. We can talk about what that really means if we have time. But how will it be handled technically? What's it going to mean to share information out of the credit union and consume it and manage it internal to credit union? So there's those types of complexities. I also think that it means there's going to be some benefits to the consumer, but also some challenges. It's going to create some fragmentation for that consumer. You think about the various financial products we have now, which is ever growing and becoming more difficult to manage. I think the same thing is likely to happen here as our financial relationships could potentially become more fragmented. So challenges for both the institution and for the members.
Yeah, completely, completely. And so how does it enable, how does Rule 1033, how does it enable more portability? What's in it that will kind of foster this activity?
Yep. Well, I mean, the information sharing clearly is just the start of it. The ability to actually move the data and move the accounts and move the products from place to place. I think that's the ultimate objective that the CFPB sees. And I think if you look at, not just reading the proposed rule, but digging into the Federal Register and looking at the comments from a lot of the players, in particular the money center banks, mm-hmm, you can kind of see what they're after and what their strategies are all about. I'll give you a few quick examples.
Sure.
So Chase seems, among other things, to be focused on, they want to charge for access and charge for the data. So they seem to be focused on monetizing their customers in a way. The only ones, a lot of commenters on the rule had similar comments about, you know, we've built these relationships. It's not just about the technology and the costs of sharing, but, you know, these are our customers that we've invested in, and now we have to share them. Mm-hmm. Wells goes even further than that. They propose that when I want to enable my credit union to have access to information from my Wells Fargo account,
yeah,
that I need to be taken into a Wells Fargo branded experience to put in my credentials.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, so you can see, you know, Chase is saying we need a toll booth, and Wells Fargo is saying we need a toll booth with our logo on it.
Exactly.
Just one more example I'll give, and that's Akoya, which is a they are a open banking API technology that banks and credit unions can acquire and deploy. And Akoya is owned by the Clearinghouse Consortium of Banks. And they're calling for the elimination of third-party data aggregators like Plaid and MX and those folks entirely, that banks should just have direct API connections, banks and credit unions, to move information between each other. Okay. So you can kind of see where this technology is being driven, where major players are trying to just you know, get leverage over the regulatory change, which is what they do, right? Mm-hmm. It's not the first time we've seen this. Mm-hmm. So that's I think we can expect that.
Well, have you heard of Credit Union Data Exchange, CUDEX?
I have, yeah.
Trellance and Filene. I mean, is that kind of related here, or is it kind of a distant cousin?
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of technologies, and there are a couple of emerging bodies that are trying to set standards around this, which I think is great. I mean, standards are obviously necessary when we're trying to do these types of things. It's more about, in my mind, who is trying to structure, who's trying to put constraints in a way that benefits their strategy.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing that credit unions need to look out for and try to understand. I mean, the rollout isn't going to happen. The actual rollout of 1033 is not going to happen for quite a while. I mean, the rule has to be finalized, and there's a rollout schedule, and it's tied to the size of the institution, et cetera. But that's not slowing down the technology vendors or the money center banks from pushing on their strategy to get into a position to take advantage of things, even today, you know, even as things are in their present form.
Now, when I first saw this, I immediately went back to the Great Recession, and when banks were upside down, they're all over the place, and all of a sudden credit unions saw this as a great opportunity to grab some market share. And I remember people coming out with these banking switch kits that you could really, you could switch from a bank to a credit union like that. And I know this is, you know, we're talking, you know, 14 years ago when all this happened, 15 years ago. But is it something related to that, where they're creating this technology to where you can switch super fast? Is that or am I going on the fintechy side of it all instead of the
point? No, I think ultimately the fast switching is where, you know, is where it could potentially lead. And there, we can talk about strategies in terms of how do you play in that environment. But I think we've seen this plenty of times. You know, when Check 21 became law, and remote deposit capture first rolled out, and then mobile deposit rolled out. You know, the money center banks, because of their scope and their access to money and technology capability, they tend to get the edge early on something like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, after the Great Recession, a lot of the new rules around regulations and compliance and all those types of things put more pressure on smaller institutions. And I think we saw the same thing with COVID and the PPP lending. The bigger institutions are able to automate a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And they use that to drive home some switching of small businesses during that entire process. Yeah. You know, I think this is just one more example where the larger institutions have a lot of stroke, and it puts them in a position to not just take advantage of the regulations, but even steer the boat to a certain extent.
Yeah. The other thing that I triggered something in my brain was that there's a stat out there, like younger generations today have like 5 or 6 banking accounts, whether it's with a bank or a credit union or a fintech. So how does that play into all this? Because I mean, you know, folks like me, I'm more than happy to have maybe 1 or 2 accounts. That's all I can really manage. But to have 6 or 7 out there, are you kidding me? So where does this play into all of that? Because it sounds like people, especially the younger generations who have all these accounts at all these places, there's a lot of juggling going on there as well. But there's an opportunity for folks to grab them and switch them pretty quickly, right?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, you know, the let's just say, you know, Gen Z in particular, and you know, late stage millennials have a lot of fractured financial relationships, as you point out, right? They're carrying different types of, direct payment platforms and different things in their wallet, those types of things. Buy now, pay later has created some similar challenges where you have payment stacking, You've got five different things you bought with buy now, pay later, and you've got, you know, maybe four or eight payments around all of them. That's complexity.
Yeah.
And I think this is going to be the same thing. It's going to get more complex. But the other thing I see in the a trend, most recently, PNC announced that they're going to open a whole bunch of branches and they're going to clean up a whole bunch of branches. And yeah. Chase is doing the same thing.
Right.
And the driver behind this are late millennials and Gen Z finding their way into branches. So as their financial lives mature, I think it takes them back into a more consolidated relationship with a traditional financial institution that's going to be able to help them with these things. Mm-hmm. It's just too complex to do on your own.
Right.
You know, this is not sending money to your friend through Venmo. It's a lot more than that. And as you buy a house or you set up a 401k or you start to invest, life gets more complex. And I think that's where credit unions and their traditional ability to service the broad swath of requirements for consumers, that's obviously their strength and will continue to be so.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. So what is Ascent's role in all of this? Because obviously you guys are experts in this area for good reason. And how do you guys help out credit unions in this area?
So we built a platform that originally the focus was around consuming third-party data, merging it with systems of record data, like from the loan origination system or the core, the payments platform, to create a more holistic view of the member and able to service them. So just thinking about something as simple as a new loan application, being able to use external and internal data to pre-fill that application and streamline the process for the for the member. And then being able to use that information and repurpose it for other products and services going forward. But as we pushed the envelope on the platform that we built, we started seeing opportunities to share that data out of the credit union to other entities in a secure and granular and on a granular basis, to not just to other financial institutions, but to insurance companies.
Oh, okay.
For healthcare, for government. If you're a small business, maybe for your trading partners. So now you start to think about this data flowing through the institution, third-party data coming in, being leveraged and processed with other data of the institution and flowing out for these emerging use cases. It puts the financial institution at the center of that relationship with the member. Again, demands the complexity, but also to be able to offer some of these new use cases based on how that information can be shared external to the credit union. Mm-hmm. So that's our overall, that's where we're going. That's okay. Our aspiration is the technology that we've built for our members, for our credit unions who are, you know, signing up to use the platform. We got to give them a way to an entry point around this. And for that purpose, we built business and commercial loan origination products, products for commercial loan renewal, portfolio monitoring and auditing. So think of these lending products as the gateway into this capability to manage member information and be that trusted partner with the member for managing information in this new open banking financial portability world that we're coming into.
Yeah, which has many pros and cons. It's definitely a two-way street, it sounds like. So last question for you, Glenn, here. What are next steps? What do credit unions need to do to, I don't want to say to protect themselves, but to at least be aware and then maybe make some preparations to where maybe that street is a wide open street coming back to their to their shop?
You know, it's a tough thing because the day-to-day pressures in running a credit union are pretty intense, really intense right about now. But I mean, our primary recommendation is to pay attention to what the money center banks are doing. Start to understand their strategy. Start going to school on them and get some learnings based on what they're doing. And we think that every financial institution in the U.S. needs to get a strategy. It may not be something that the credit union is going to do tomorrow, but start thinking about this and thinking about what your entry point is and how you're going to leverage open banking and financial portability, not just on a defensive basis, but to add new value for your members, you know, to just grow that stickiness and become more trusted in this, you know, growing complexity that consumers are living in terms of their financial lives.
Yeah. Well said. I think that's a great message to end on. Alrighty, Glenn. Well, I'm going to let you get back to work. Anything else to add to wrap up before I let you get back to work?
No, that's great, Mike. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and your audience.
Oh, indeed. Well, we're glad you were here. This is a, I think this is a very timely topic that I think credit unions really need to be aware of and stay on top of for sure. Because yeah, like you said, it's not happening right now, but it'll be happening down the road. So to be aware of it and make the necessary preparations is all too important right now for sure. So yeah, good stuff. Alrighty, Glenn, thank you so much for hanging out with me today. Appreciate it. And look forward to the next chat.
And thank you.
A quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible. This episode is sponsored by the On With Origins podcast. Learn how credit union experts conquer today's toughest challenges while driving measurable results.